Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Michelle Franzen. After more than a year of war in Gaza, sparked by the Hamas attacks on October 7th in Israel, a framework to end the conflict now reached. It follows months of brokered talks. President Biden at the White House moments ago.
Because at long last, I can announce a ceasefire and a hostage deal has been reached between Israel and Hamas.
The first phase would bring the release of 33 hostages, including Americans held for more than 460 days. And later plans include reconstruction of Gaza. ABC's Martha Raddatz has more.
The destruction there is enormous. 2.6 million people, 90%, it is estimated, have been displaced. And Hamas says 46,000 have been killed.
President Biden says elements of the deal are similar to the plan he introduced last May and added his administration, along with the incoming Trump administration, worked with one voice during the final talks. This is ABC News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For AM 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska. After last month's school shooting at Abundant Life Christian School in Madison, dozens of Culver's restaurants stepped up to help. With more, here's Civic Media's Brittany Merlot.
Culver's announced yesterday that its fundraising efforts for the Abundant Life Christian School following the deadly shooting in December totaled $165,000. 80 locations participated in the fundraiser and are donating a portion of their January 6th sales to benefit families impacted by the shooting. The funds will go directly from the restaurants to the United Way of Dane County's Abundant Life Christian School Emergency and Recovery Fund.
Many Culver's locations in southwestern and western Wisconsin took part in the fundraiser. Colder temperatures might not be for everyone, but it does help in promoting winter activities. Pogue Park's ice rink is open, according to La Crosse Parks and Rec officials. It's open 4 to 8 p.m. weekdays and 12 to 6 p.m. on days when there isn't school, including weekends. It's free to skate, and rental skates are free as well. Other rinks in La Crosse are open as well, including at Riverside Park, Copeland Park, and the Oktoberfest Shelter Rink. Pogue Park also has people on hand to help with skates. Wisconsin is a great place to raise a family. That's according to a new study. With more, here's Civic Media's Stuart J. Waddles.
When it comes to raising a family, Wisconsin ranks 8th. That's according to a new report from Wallet Hub. They used metrics like median family income, housing affordability, and school quality to determine the best states. Massachusetts and Minnesota topped the list.
Other Midwestern and Northeastern states fared well in the rankings. Today's colder temperatures will give way to a brief warm-up. By Friday, we could see highs around 40 degrees in the Cooley region. Then the bottom drops out as an Arctic blast settles in early next week. Temperatures could fall into the negative teens Sunday through Tuesday. Wind chills could drop 20 to 30 below zero. Tonight, there is also a chance of some light snow. Accumulations expected to be under 1 inch in the La Crosse area. We'll have more details coming up in our forecast. For WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
The Bucks topple the Kings. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Milwaukee Bucks took command in the first quarter and beat the Sacramento Kings 130-115. Giannis Antetokounmpo with his 50th career triple-double on getting off to a fast start.
We had like a pace about us, I think, in the first quarter. And we would just make shots, too. I think we scored like 45 points, 47 points in the first play. So that's good.
In Madison, the Wisconsin Badgers beat the Ohio State Buckeyes 70-68. That was Greg Gard's 200th career win as head coach. Marquette, on the road in Chicago, went into overtime with DePaul, but pulled out an 85-83 win over the Blue Demons. In the NFL, Packers quarterback coach Tom Clements announcing he's decided to retire. He is 71 years old. Running back A.J. Dillon says he'll return stronger than ever. Dillon spent all of last season on IR with a neck stinger. He's set to become a free agent. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Breezy and becoming cloudy today, with wind switching to out of the south, gusting up to 20 miles per hour. It'll shove our highs to the mid-20s. However, spotty snow showers are expected early this evening. Around a half an inch of accumulation is possible, and it'll be gone by tomorrow with highs above freezing. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 19.
You're an organ donor, right? Here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Have you outgrown your health insurance plan? The number one reason we all change our health insurance is price. Are you paying too much for your health insurance? Would you like to have better coverage at a better rate? Take a few minutes right now and find out if you can save money or even qualify for zero-cost health insurance in your state. Call now.
800-693-9308. 800-693-9308. That's 800-693-9308.
Dom Salvia.
Next time, Matt Rothschild will join as co-host. Trump proposes an external revenue service. Can you reduce the size of government by creating more government agencies? Tune in.
The Dom Salvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matt and Air on Air.
Everybody, how you doing? My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Listen, if you're not listening in southeastern Wisconsin on 540 AM WAUK, not to worry. We've got you covered statewide and beyond. Just download the Civic Media app from your favorite app store. It's free. Share with everybody you know, and you can take Civic Media's incredible talk radio lineup with you wherever you may be. Of course, you can always listen to us at the Civic Media website, of course, on TuneIn, Spotify, on Apple Pods for our older programs, even yesterday's, as well as on TuneIn. Civic Media's got a YouTube channel. You can listen also and watch me on my Instagram and X handles at Maggie Dawn Show. So many ways to access our talk lineup, because we're all about real news and great conversation. And we certainly are going to have some things to talk about today. I'm going to break down for you my 10 takeaways from the Jack Smith January 6th insurrection report. I've read it. There's a lot. I can fully say that in the slightly over 24 hours, I have not been able to read every single footnote in detail. And there are a lot of footnotes because there is a lot of evidence. But I've read the rest of it, except for the footnotes in detail, and I think I've got 10 really good takeaways for each of you. I have stayed away from commentary on this because I wanted to give you my unvarnished, unbiased take. So we got that coming up for you. If we've got time today, I'm going to squeeze in some of my commentary and thoughts about the more eyebrow-raising moments in Pam Bondi's Senate confirmation hearing that occurred this morning. Of course, she was Donald Trump's second pick for attorney general after the Matt Gaetz debacle went kablooey. We'll talk a little bit about Pam because it was a little weird. I got to tell you, it was strange. So if we don't get to that today, I will share that with you tomorrow at 3 o'clock. We've got our weekly segment with Emily's List. We call it Sounds Like Change. We're going to talk about all of the new women in this 119th Congress and what they may be bringing to the table, why women in Congress may be an important bulwark against Trump 2.0. And to close out the day today at 3:30, and I'm trying out a new segment with each and every one of you, because again, the news, it comes fast and furious. It's going to be insane during Trump 2.0. We've got to figure out how to stay healthy, healthy physically and mentally with one another. So I'm introducing a new segment today. It's going to be every Wednesday at 3:30. It's called Over the Hump, as in Wednesdays are hump days, Over the Hump and Trump. And we are going to talk about and sort of ground ourselves, if you all don't mind, in what I'm going to call like my six wishes for 2025, or my six intentions for 2025, which are, I've talked about these a bit last Wednesday as well, to move more, play more, create more, connect more, rest more, and laugh more. And so each week we'll, pick one or two of those and we'll talk about them together. Like, what are you doing to check out of the politics and into your connections with friends and family and community? How are you recharging? Because we need to do this. And again, on Wednesdays, on hump days after what are usually fire hoses of news days on Mondays and Tuesdays that usually involve the great orange man. Yeah, we're going to get over the hump and Trump together every Wednesday at 3:30. Today, I'm going to be talking about like creating and like opening up our creativity. And what does that really require? Because it seems like social media and the news cycles, guilty as charged, part of it myself, it seems that they have really claimed our attention, right? That the commodity of today, the driving force behind so many products, it's all about our attention and the capitalism that is fueled by the attention and what it takes to get it and keep it. So we're going to talk a little bit about today. So we got all that planned for you today. But everybody, I have a little story for you, because some wild business just went down outside my house. I love a good sandwich, y'all. I mean, like, love a good sandwich. My college roommate and I, we had like sandwich making contests, and people have got all kinds of opinions. You have pro avocado camp, the pro onion camp, the anti avocado and onion camp. It's got to be a pickled onion because you don't want the bad. Okay, we can go. I love a good sandwich. So I will often order from my favorite sandwich joint, like this very customized sandwich that I love a lot. It's got sprouts. It's got cucumbers. It's got a schmear on it. I love this stuff. I order up my favorite sandwich. I never get down there when the guy delivers the sandwich. It's two flights of stairs downstairs. It's cold outside. It's like nature's best refrigerator, right? I don't got to get my sandwich right away. So I get the sandwich delivered. Guy texts me. Okay, check, Roger. It's there. Thank you very much. I always tip my delivery drivers. And about, I don't know, 5 minutes later, I hear my doorbell ring. Now, this is weird. I know I don't have any packages coming. So I yell down, I'm coming. And I come, you know, hurtling down my stairs, get to the front door, open it up. It's a neighbor that I've seen walking his dog a few times. And he's like, did you just order a sandwich, some food or something? Yes. He's like, well, that guy just took your bag. And this is like a little bit after the delivery guys told me that he just dropped it off. He said, well, that guy just took your bag and is walking down the street. And I just, you know, Maggie Dawn doing some Maggie Dawn is like, hey, dude, can I have my sandwich back? And like waving my arms. I'm out there like my dog squawking. And I take a, you know, little jog. Hey, man, that one's mine. Sorry. Hey, can you bring that back? And guy kind of looks at me and he like waves back and like ducks between a couple of houses. I'm so crushed, right? Because I have been craving this very special sandwich all day long. So I get back, go back in, pick up my work where I left off. All right, cool. A few minutes later, I hear some more loud talking outside. Dude's back with my bag with the sandwich in it. Kid you not. And he's like chatting it up with my neighbor. It's more jawing. And the neighbor's like, can you just put her sandwich down? I open up the window and he's like, I'm sorry, ma'am. Which house is yours? I'm like, this one with the door right in, like right below me, right where I'm talking. And he's like, where do you want me to put it? Over here? Or clearly the guy was trying to make like, I didn't just swipe your sandwich, lady. So I just said, leave the sandwich, please. And I'll come down and get it, man. And in the 2 minutes that it took for me to get downstairs, sandwich was there. Guy that took it, nowhere to be seen. I was actually hoping he would stay there because, man, if you are hungry and you need this sandwich more than me, I will happily give it to you, brother. But, like, just ask me for the sandwich. Don't swipe the sandwich. Swipe. That's our Wednesday. Don't swipe the sandwich, right, Cardi? Like, leave the sandwich alone. Oh, my God. For real, though, I was like, I cannot believe this dude just swiped the sandwich and then came back. The stealth swipe of the sandwich, and he returns then with the sandwich, literally sandwich handed. It's a little bit like red handed, but like sandwich handed. Do you have a favorite sandwich, Cardi, my friend?
I am a gyro type of person, or gyro, however they pronounce that.
That's depends on where you're at, yeah. You know?
That's my
now,
favorite.
Do you like the straight, like traditional gyro off the spit, shave that puppy in the pita with the cucumber sauce, the tzatziki and the onions and all that good stuff, the fully loaded gyro?
Yeah, that's yeah, that's it right there. You got it right on the head.
Oh, yeah. I do love a gyro myself. I may have gone to Oakland gyros a few too many times when I was in college, a little late night, schnickety schnack about the gyro. I mean, I if it is good, I am all about it. Ditto in Madison when I was in law school. There is a gyro joint that's basically right on State Street. That place, you want to know where the party in Madison is on a Friday or Saturday night? Like, go hit up the gyro joint on State Street. Everybody and their cousin is in that joint getting their gyro. And I especially like a gyro when it comes with like piping hot French fries right out of the fryer, where they're like too hot to pick up. That will cure what ails you. Of course, also, everybody eat your vegetables. That's why you got to get the onions and the tomatoes on the gyro. Can't just survive on gyro meat and French fries alone, y'all. Get your tzatziki sauce. It's like vegetable adjacent. There's cucumbers in there. I don't mean to promote unhealthy eating. We got enough of that going on. But yes, those are a couple of the things that I really enjoy. Folks, that is Cardi, my friend, on the board, producer extraordinaire. My name's Maggie Dawn. I don't just talk about sandwiches. I promise everybody it is a political talk radio talk show. And we got some real news today to talk about. We got Pam Bondi's confirmation hearing in the Senate. I want to share all of my thoughts about Jack Smith's January 6th report. There is some really, I think, unusual and notable takeaways that get beyond sort of the technical legal slog that report is in many ways. I'm going to break down Maggie's top 10 takeaways on Jack Smith's January 6th report and what that means for you and your family as we are looking at the confirmation of the next attorney general. These last 2 days have had these weird echoes, right? You got yesterday, I spent the first hour of the show talking about the lawless Aileen Cannon, the woman that had been until recently overseeing the criminal case against Donald Trump for stealing our super secret spy documents. And at the same time, we had in the U.S. Senate the confirmation of Pete Hegseth for the Secretary of Defense. Those things are linked together, people, right? They're linked together because they both have to deal with our national security. And again, today, we've got the linkage between the Jack Smith report and what it means, what it says about the rule of law and the fair-handed ideal that our system of laws tries to achieve every day. We fail at it, but the idea that this is the ideal, while at the same time, a personal loyalist, a partisan in a confirmation hearing to become the next U.S. Attorney General, who would, of course, control special counsels like Jack Smith. Past is prologue, y'all, and I will break it down for you when we come back. I got to take care of a little bit of business. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're not going to want to go anywhere. We dissect the Jack Smith January 6th report next. Keep it locked and then join us. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
If you're living with dry age-related macular degeneration or dry AMD, you may be at risk for developing geographic atrophy or GA. GA can be unpredictable and progress rapidly, leading to irreversible vision loss. Now there's something you can do to
slow it down and get it going slower.
Eyezervay is proven to slow GA progression.
Eyezervay gets GA. get going slower.
Izervay or Avastin Captid Pagel is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. Izervay can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. Izervay may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about Izervay today.
Izervay gets GA going slower.
Visit Izervay.com. That's Izervay.com.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In the first week of the new session of the Wisconsin State Legislature, Republicans fast-tracked a measure that would put a question on the ballot in the upcoming spring election that would enshrine voter ID in the state constitution. Two things on this. First, it is telling that Republicans made this their very first order of business. Senate Democratic leader Dianne Hesselbein responded to this, saying it's not cost of living or health care or gun violence that Republicans wanted to focus on, but a constitutional amendment. Telling, isn't it? But that leads to the second piece. Republicans are clearly doing this for politically motivated reasons. By having this on the spring election ballot, they're betting it will make it more likely that people who showed up to vote for Donald Trump in November will be heading to the polls to help elect right-wing candidate Brad Schimmel to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. That election is on April 1st, so buckle up.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, Lacrosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
We was OD like DOC, remember that. My DOC was quite OD,
listen,
ID my facts.
Our legal system is supposed to work not based on bad blood and political enemies lists, but based on rigorous investigations of the facts and an equally vigorous application of the law to the facts. That's how prosecutorial determinations are supposed to be made. Today, we're going to talk about one such investigation. Jack Smith, as special counsel, his investigation into what occurred on January 6th, as well as everything that led up to it, the months and months of lie telling that Donald Trump did following the election in 2020. And the fact that, based on the evidence amassed by Jack Smith, it is unquestionable that Donald Trump knew that he had lost the 2020 election, knew that there was no evidence anywhere that there was any level in any state of election irregularity that would have resulted in the election turning out in Donald Trump's favor. He knew it and lied to the American public, and then engaged both members of the private sector, many lawyers, but also people within the U.S. government to attempt to illegally and unlawfully maintain power. That's what the Jack Smith January 6th report is all about. And one of the takeaways that I have, and I encourage everyone to read it. I will ensure that we eventually have a link to the report in our show notes from today. Everyone should read it. You do not have to read like all 175 pages of it. Read his transmittal letter, which is the first thing in the report, from Jack Smith to Attorney General Merrick Garland, and read just the first, it's about like 25-ish pages, 25, 30 pages. They're just about the facts. That's all it is. And by the way, all of the factual allegations in those first 25, 30 pages of the Jack Smith report have these incredibly copious, sometimes it's the majority of the page, footnotes that identify the specific emails, communications, depositions. In other words, all of the actual direct evidence that support the factual statement in Jack Smith's report. And I'm going to tell you this, everybody. That's how it's supposed to look. When you hear politicians making assertions, the question should always be, and where is the evidence of X, Y, or Z? And when there isn't any evidence, it means that what the politician's saying is at best an exaggeration, a rhetorical flourish, and at worst, a lie. At worst, a lie. So the first thing that jumped off the page to me is the return to normalcy in terms of how facts and legal argumentation is presented, with copious citation, backed by evidence. That's what Jack Smith's report shows. So that's the first thing to me. And what that points to is part of that takeaway is that, again, this is about the rule of law. This is about trying to have an application of the law to particular situations and facts, not based on who's being investigated, not based on who may have done it, but a fair-handed, even-handed, it doesn't matter who you are, I'm going to investigate the facts, I'm going to care about the facts, and I'm going to apply the law to these facts as I find them, not with some predetermined outcome. And again, the language of Jack Smith in this report is so, I don't know, calm, straightforward, unadorned, basic. And it stands in this weird, sharp contrast to all of this garbage that was vomited up yesterday by Pete Hegseth, the more spin and bizarreness that Pam Bondi spewed at her Senate confirmatory committee today. Because that's not how people usually sound. That's not how professionals approach these things. So again, emphasis on facts and rule of law, copious footnotes, attention to those details. It's not just out of nowhere. So that's takeaway one. The tone that is supported by this idea, this ideal, that this work of prosecutors must be nonpartisan. That is the second takeaway, that we must, as prosecutors, always ensure our independence and objectivity from the political arms of government, that is an essential first principle of any democracy. And that restrained tone, that control, that fidelity to that ideal comes through in spades in Jack Smith's report. Again, you don't have to read 175 pages. Just read the couple of pages of his letter to Merrick Garland and then the first 30 pages of facts. Just go read it for yourself. Those are the two big takeaways right off the top. It's about facts and the rule of law, that facts matter, and it is about the highest standards of prosecutorial conduct, which necessitate that prosecutors are independent, objective, and by, of course, completely nonpartisan, that the operation of law enforcement never becomes captured by partisan interests. Now, I want to read you a little bit of his letter of transmittal of this report from Jack Smith to Merrick Garland. And I'm not going to begin at the beginning. I'm going to begin at the, fourth to last paragraph, because this idea that it is nonpartisan, independent, and objective is so crucial to Jack Smith. He writes this: "It is equally important for me to make clear that nobody within the Department of Justice ever sought to interfere with or improperly influence my prosecutorial decision-making. I was appointed by you with the authority vested in you to countermand any of my decisions, but you did not do so. Nor did you, the Deputy Attorney General, nor members of your staff ever attempt to improperly influence my decisions as it relates to whether to bring charges against Mr. Trump. And to all who know me well, the claim from Mr. Trump that my decisions as a prosecutor were influenced directly or indirectly by the Biden administration or other political actors is laughable." That's the truth. We'll be right back as we dig further into the Jack Smith J6 report.
You're listening to the Talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Ice-cold Wisconsin winters not stopping the educational process for students involved in the farm and industry short course. I'm Pam Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Wednesday. This is the second year now that the farm and industry short course has found its new home on the UW River Falls campus, where instructor Steve Kelm is trying to keep students motivated. He said right now they've got 10 students enrolled, which is more than they had in previous classes. And he said what they're doing is making sure that they're targeting what students want to learn with how students want to learn.
We certainly wish to maximize kind of the hands-on perspective. We recognize kind of at the beginning that a lot of work on farm would be ideal, and we've kept that pretty strongly in place. We have certainly been in kind of adjusting schedules too, just to make sure that certain things fit better into student schedules. And we've also opened up, you know, some additional avenues for extracurricular activities.
Dr. Steve Kelm, he's the coordinator for the Farm and Industry Short Course happening now on the UW River Falls campus. Students will continue their education until March.
I think the collaboration that we see between Wisconsin Farm Bureau and these other commodity groups gives us a cohesive message, a singular stance in agriculture that offers credibility. It gives us a cohesive message and support for all of our agricultural organizations.
WFBF.com.
It's easy to join.
A voice for farmers, a vision for agriculture. Wisconsin Farm Bureau.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
Rural Mutual Insurance, the number one farm insurer in Wisconsin, is here for you even when the weather isn't. With crop hail damage, protect your operation from hail, fire, lightning, and more. Visit ruralmutual.com/farm.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
And this afternoon is the beginning of the 25th anniversary celebration of the Dairy Business Association. That group started in the Green Bay area 25 years ago, and they'll return to the Green Bay area for their 2025 annual conference. They'll kick things off this evening with a special tailgating event happening at Lambeau Fields Atrium. The Midwest Farm Report team is going to be there. Follow us on social media to keep up with all the conversations that we're enjoying. That's a quick update on what's happening in food news for Wednesday. Don't forget, sign up for our daily e-newsletter, and you won't miss a thing. Just send us your email at MidwestFarmReport.com. I'm Pam Yonke.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Breezy and becoming cloudy today, with winds switching to out of the south, gusting up to 20 miles per hour. It'll shove our highs to the mid-20s. However, spotty snow showers are expected early this evening. Around a half an inch of accumulation is possible, and it'll be gone by tomorrow, with highs above freezing. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 19.
This message is sponsored by WisCaregiver.com. People across Wisconsin are enjoying the rewards, stability, and flexibility of a career in healthcare. Why not you? WisCaregiver.com gets you started. Choose between two great options. Become a CDCP, Certified Direct Care Professional, or a CNA, Certified Nurse Aide. Training is free. Plus, earn a $500 bonus. It's easy to start your new career. Learn more at WisCaregiver.com.
The Todd Alba Show.
What's worse, fast drivers or slow drivers? Karina listening on WAUK in Milwaukee.
Slow drivers are the worst. They think too slow. They stop in the middle of the highway to think about where they're going. Maybe they need to turn left and right. They're changing lines for, oh my God, I can do all day long.
Karina?
Yes.
Can you tell us what you really think?
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Earl Ingram.
On the next show, we'll remember the life and impact of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We'll listen to excerpts from his speeches and discuss how it relates to the present day.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 till 10.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I like to think I'm your friendly lady lawyer, though I will be fired up from time to time right here on the Civic Media Talk Radio Network. Even when you disagree, as long as you stay on topic, I will give you a shot at the thing that we're dissecting and discussing. Today, for the first hour, I'm digging in to Jack Smith's January 6th report, which I think is an exemplar of restraint and how prosecutors, when they are at their best, go about doing their jobs. And I want to just put this note, this pin down. Hey, does anyone out there recall ever hearing a single leak from Jack Smith's special prosecutor team? And the answer to that is no, not one peep, not one document, nothing ever. Professionals. You investigate the facts, you apply the law to the facts, and you move forward and charge according to that. You take instructions from courts, like about immunity. You then reassess facts, you reassess the newly stated law, you apply that newly stated law to the facts, and you go obtain a superseding indictment based on that new interpretation of the law. You do so without fear or favor, in a nonpartisan, independent, objective way. That's the way, especially prosecutions in this nation, should operate. CJ, my friend, do you agree that's the way that prosecutors' offices should operate? Hello, CJ.
Well, can you hear me?
Yep. Do you agree that prosecutors' offices, yes, sir, I can hear you. Do you agree that prosecutors, whether state or federal, should be nonpartisan, they should not take direction from political actors, that they should investigate the law and apply the law to the facts and proceed without fear or favor, regardless of who may be the subject of the investigation, that that's the ideal and the standard?
Absolutely, I agree.
Wonderful.
Yes, definitely. And, you know, I think I cannot wait until the new Attorney General, Pam Bondi, because along with Cash Patel, we're going to find out just how corrupt some of our most trusted institutions are and have been over the last four years.
Let you make your statement. Let me ask you a follow-up question. Okay. Yep. Are you at all concerned with the fact that both Ms. Bondi and Mr. Patel have been extraordinarily partisan actors before their appointments in these major leadership roles, that they, unlike, for example, Jack Smith, who's never had any political involvement, or even Merrick Garland? He wasn't stumping for Biden. He didn't do anything political to support Joe Biden. That unlike that attorney general, unlike that special counsel, that Ms. Bondi and Mr. Patel are clearly indisputably partisan actors. Does that give you any pause? Does it raise questions about whether they're the right fit for jobs that should be done in a nonpartisan manner?
Well, I can't wait for you to watch, because I watched C-SPAN with Pam Bondi, and the way she handles herself, it's amazing. You should be so proud of a woman prosecutor.
But CJ, my question, I'm very proud that Ms. Bondi became an elected attorney general in one of our nation's largest states, but I am concerned that the appearance of objectivity of independence is compromised from both Ms. Bondi and Mr. Patel, because prior to their appointments to these incredibly powerful law enforcement positions, they have been behaving as partisan actors. They have explicitly been supportive of a partisan actor, of a party and of a candidate. Whereas prior AGs, they weren't so overtly partisan. They weren't stumping for particular presidential candidates.
You mean unlike Merrick Garland, when he attacked parents for going to school board and they tried to retract
CJ, even if I grant you that happened, I'm asking you, But CJ, we've established an ideal and a principle that you and I agree with. And so the follow-up to that is when you have people that are appointed who do not, and in their past positions, have not been independent, objective, unbiased, apolitical actors, doesn't that immediately raise some concerns that they will in fact be what we just agreed, what you and I just agreed was the ideal, a nonpartisan, objective, independent actor that is not swayed by the partisan and political interests of the man who happens to sit in the Oval Office?
She's going to actually not have two tiers of justice. She's going.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that, CJ, because here are the two-tiered system of justice as I see it. There is the system of justice that is for rich people, powerful people, people with political connections. And that is regardless of whether or not that person is rich or has political connections, regardless of whether or not they're Democrats or Republicans. There's one system for those people. And then there is another system for all of the rest of us working suckers. That's the two-tiered system of justice. It's not driven by partisanship. It's driven by money and power and access. That's why you're ticked off, CJ, because you don't think you're getting a fair shot at it. And I agree with you about that. I agree with you that working people don't get treated fairly. Because they don't. The two systems, the two economies, the two legal systems, it's not divided by party. It's divided by power and money. Thanks so much for your call, CJ. I'm glad we could get to the heart of the matter. Next up, Jeannie from Eau Claire. Jeannie, how are you? And what's your thought this afternoon?
First of all, you have the patience of a saint. And I wish I were more like you. But as I watched what happened on our Capitol, as I watch what happened in the great state of Wisconsin with the Green Bay sweep, as I watched pushing back trials, pushing back legal responsibilities, I don't have the patience of you, and I am really frustrated as to what happened in our state and in our country with the lies, deception, and fraud. And it's a real insult to have somebody keep saying that, oh, we got to do Biden, it's Biden, Biden. No, it isn't. It's Donald J. Trump. I don't usually say his name, but gal darn it, the guy doesn't tell the truth. He's never been held accountable, and we're the ones that are left to pay the price. So please.
Yeah, oops, sorry, Jeannie. I think we lost you there. My apologies about that, and I appreciate the support. You know, I hear a lot of commentary from some of the conservatives, whether they're texting me, and I try to read out texts and the messages that come across from people that disagree with me. I try to give CJ a shot. And the root, the thing that I think is so interesting here is that we mostly agree on the ideal, right? We mostly agree on the ideals that prosecution, investigation, law enforcement should not be a partisan matter. But then we sort of dip off the end, you know, of the pier into allegations and talking points that have never had any direct evidentiary support. Not that I've seen. And we can't seem to return to first principles or even observe what is obvious. And my conversation with CJ of moments ago was an example of that, right? Pam Bondi and Kash Patel have been overtly political partisan actors. That raises, a reasonable question about their ability to satisfy the ideal of law enforcement that CJ, that we began the call agreeing about, right? That it should be apolitical and nonpartisan, independent and objective. So that's where, you know, my frustration comes in. We can agree about the value, the thing that we all wish to see in this world. And then all of a sudden we're off to the races about, you know, again, things that do not have a factual basis. And here's where I'm going to go back to Jack Smith's report. This is in his introductory letter to Merrick Garland. If you want to join this great conversation, 855-75-CIVIC, that's 855-752-4842. My name's Maggie Dawn, your friendly lawyer, lady, and economist right here on the Maggie Dawn Show from 2 to 4 p.m. every Monday through Friday across the Civic Media Radio Network. Here's what Jack Smith said about facts. While we were not able to bring the cases we charged to trial, talking about the major two cases against Donald Trump, Jack Smith continues, quote, I believe the fact that our team stood up for the rule of law matters. I believe the example our team set for others to fight for justice without regard to the personal costs matters. The facts as we uncovered them in our investigation as set forth in my report matter. Experienced prosecutors know that you cannot control outcomes. You can only do your job the right way for the right reasons. I conclude our work confident that we have done so and that we have fully met our obligations to the department and to our country. Facts matter. The rule of law matters. They have to matter. And being able to accurately observe the facts, to wit, Kash Patel and Pam Bondi are hopelessly partisan, politically compromised actors, and that that's not good enough for any American, that we do have a two-tiered system of economics and a two-tiered system of justice, and that those two tiers aren't driven by which party you belong to, though Donald Trump has promised to make it so, that the two-tiered system is about haves and have-nots, or have the most and don't. That's what this is about. 855-752-855-75-CIVIC. Gary, my man, how are you, friend?
Good. Hang on just one second.
I'll give you a second. Okay, go ahead, Gary.
I'm back. Okay, well, don't you think that it should be, the way it's been a partisan appointments all the time. JFK appointed his brother.
That was terrible.
Well, he did. And the fact is that when you're the president of the United States, I'm just repeating everything, but you have a right to pick whoever you want. And as far as I'm concerned,
but Gary, wait. Let's just check that a second. Do you though? The Constitution built in the advice and consent of the Senate. It's not an unmitigated right to pick whatever Yahoo you want. It's with the advice and consent of the Senate. And senators yesterday asking Pete Hegseth how many push-ups he can do is objectively, I think, an insult to the American people.
The thing is, everybody, I was watching MSNBC. I watched this general, I don't remember his name, four-star general, and he said, Pete's going to be the appointment.
Confirmed. I said that yesterday on my show. Pete Hegseth is going to be our next Secretary of Defense. Doesn't make it right. Doesn't mean he's the best guy for the job. Doesn't make the Senate hearing a fulfillment of those senators' duties and oaths to each and every one of us as American citizens, and specifically to their constituents that elected them to do a job, to advise and consent. They have been failing to do so.
You know that I think, and you may disagree with this, but Jack Smith and Judge Merchan, I think
Merchan,
that those two, yes, I'm sorry if I mispronounced it.
It's okay.
Those guys are the ones that are responsible for Donald Trump getting elected as president. Because before, there was a time that I just wanted Donald Trump to go away. But when he started being persecuted, prosecuted, and then found guilty, and now he's a felon, as far as I'm concerned, and this is my opinion as a Republican, that I'm very happy he's president of the United States, because I think a lot of this stuff, maybe he committed some stupid little error crime or something like that. But as far as I'm concerned, it's ridiculous. They went after him to keep him from campaigning. And they went after him as a political adversary.
What if none of that's true, Gary? So, like, let's just engage in a thought experiment. And if you will hang on the line, I want to ask you about this, and I'll give you the little time that we've got to do our business here at Civic to think about this. What if you're wrong? Which has the greater downside risk to you, your family, the middle class, and the American people? A grifter in chief, a fraudster, an accused rapist who appoints lawyers? Like, let's think about what the actual downside risk is. And then let's talk about the roles that both Judge Merchan and Jack Smith had and whether or not they fulfilled them. Folks, I'm Maggie Dawn. We got Gary on the line. We got a great discussion going. Join us, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-40.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, LaCrosse's home for the Todd Allball Show.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on.
But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Our recent reporting explored the massive contributions to Donald Trump's inaugural fund, reportedly reaching $170 million. What are the rules as to how that money is spent? The short answer is, there aren't any. The Federal Election Commission allows private donations to support inaugural activities. This year, that's a parade, a rally, two luncheons, a tea, three dinners, three inaugural balls, and fireworks at Trump's Sterling Golf Club. The FEC requires reporting of donations over $200, but sets no limits or dictates how it's used. Let's say that the Trump inauguration has 12 events and they cost an astronomical $2 million each, a whopping $24 million. That leaves $146 million left. When the inauguration is over, will we know how the leftover money will be used? We won't. While a Trump campaign source told the New York Times some would be used for Trump's presidential library, there are no rules dictating how that money is used. The Inaugural Fund Integrity Act is expected to be reintroduced in Congress in January, which would set a limit of $50,000, require immediate disclosure of contributions over $1,000, and ban corporate and super PAC donations. That's a start, but the legislation still doesn't require disclosure of how that extra money gets spent. Find out more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Eagle 1490 AM.
In this dirty old part of the city, where the sun refused to shine.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network, where we will have a conversation with anybody as long as it is on topic. I've got one of my favorite callers on the line, my conservative friend Gary. We're talking about what the ideals for prosecutions and law enforcement are, that it should be nonpartisan and objective and independent. And Gary was making the comment that he believes that Donald Trump was materially helped by the New York criminal fraud case and the Jack Smith investigations. Now, Gary, I want to separate out what may be politically very real. And that is, I as a political reality, I don't disagree with your conclusion that politically those things helped Donald Trump. But isn't the rule of judge, the role of Judge Mershon and Jack Smith is once that case is before them, once they've been tasked with their job, they are to execute their function without any consideration of those political ramifications. And I think measured by that stick, they both did so, I think, in a pretty outstanding fashion. Again, separating out what their jobs are once they have those cases versus the political impacts of those prosecutions. And keep in mind, Gary, I have never liked the New York fraud prosecution. I've always thought that was a mess. But that's question one. And then question two is, what's the greater risk to us as the middle class? Isn't the greater risk that Donald Trump, as you put it, may have done some little thing? And I don't think stealing our national secrets is a little thing. But isn't the greater risk like, yeah, this guy maybe had done these things. We never saw the evidence tested in court except for the New York fraud trial. Like, isn't that a pretty serious existential risk for all of us?
Well, the first question you talked about, Mershon, he went out there and come up with 34 felonies for him.
He didn't come up with those felonies. That's what the DA charged him with. There's a difference. Mershon received the case from the DA. A grand jury indicted Donald Trump. Mershon didn't decide on the 34 felonies.
If I committed 34 felonies, Maggie, I would be spending time in jail. If it was so bad, wait, I just asked you a question. If it was so bad, 34 felonies, and for Donald Trump to be unconditionally released, unconditionally, which never happened.
Because the Supreme Court required it. That's what Judge Mershon said in the sentencing. He said the Supreme Court requires that I can't punish him. That's what he said. He said this has nothing to do with the seriousness of this offense or its impact. The law compels the unconditional release. That wasn't Judge Mershon's decision. You don't like that decision, then look at the Supreme Court that Donald Trump loaded up with his handpicked appointees.
Well, the thing is, I know you're going to think I'm nuts, but I wish he would have got like 10 days jail time, because then he really would have been a hero. In my eyes and everybody else's eyes, every MAGA out there. You know?
But why does a MAGA celebrate the criminality or even this specter of criminality? You yourself conceded maybe he did some of these things. Why support a guy when the downside risk that he has done some of these things is like, screw the middle class, I'm handing over the reins to billionaires, more tax cuts for billionaires. Like, why isn't that an unacceptable risk that he's actually a bad actor?
Donald Trump is not he's not a moral person, in my opinion.
Why is that okay for a president then? Why is that okay, Gary?
Because Maggie, we had two choices. We had a very extreme weak candidate in Kamala Harris, as far as I'm concerned. She's like a joke.
Say whatever you want to say. Just hang on a second. Maybe Kamala Harris is weak. But you just said Donald Trump is an immoral person. Why is it acceptable to have an immoral person in the most powerful job in the world?
Because we had two choices. And this is what I tell my friends. I don't like Donald Trump. I never liked him. I held my nose when I voted for him the very first time. The only thing is, I found out after he became president in 2016, he took on the swamp.
Gary, we've lost you. That's we've lost the through line. I got to take a couple more callers. Charles B. from Waukesha, sir, your thoughts.
Hi, Maggie. I 2 points, please. First, CJ, when he talks about there's a two-tier justice system, Maggie, what you and I relate to when it comes to two-tier, when you have black defendants and white defendants, yes, and it's the same crime, and a black defendant gets jail time and a white defendant doesn't get anything. That's what we're talking about. CJ's two-tier justice system is Donald Trump being prosecuted. That's what
whatever
CJ's
Donald Trump
about.
Says it is. Yeah.
Right. And then as far as Gary, Maggie, I don't buy that, well, people voted for Donald Trump because they felt sorry for him. Maggie, he's been a crook his entire life. Probably as a teenager. They didn't just decide, well, let's come up with these charges. No, he ran for the presidency, the highest office in the world. And you know, like I do, when you go for that office, they turn over every pebble to find out about your past history. He's a crook. And if you vote for somebody that you say you can't stand, it says something about your moral character.
It sure does, Charles B. I'm going to always give Gary the benefit of the doubt that they folks mean well, but I would take weak and moral over strong and immoral any day of the week. Thanks to Kimber from Muskoka, Jack from Merrimack, our other callers, John, Gary, I can't get back to you, Mark. We got to take care of a little business. We're going to come right on back after the top of the hour news, weather, and sports with Sounds Like Change with Emily's List, our special guest every Wednesday. Don't worry, y'all. I'll pick this conversation back up tomorrow. We'll get to Pam Bondi tomorrow with Tom Paulswitz, my special guest host on Thursdays. So keep it locked, everybody. We'll be right back after these important messages on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Up North News Radio.
Jane Mattenair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Governor Evers announcing a new Office of Violence Prevention, talking about gun safety. And J.R. Ratcliffe, stalk all things sports in hour number two. Join us.
Mattenair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds.
Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse. And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Michelle Franzen. Israel and Hamas announced they have reached a tentative agreement that would end the more than year-long war in Gaza and free hostages kidnapped in the October 7th attacks. President Biden at the White House says the framework of that deal is close to his plan proposed back in May, winding down the war in phases, getting humanitarian aid into Gaza, Israeli forces withdrawing, and bringing the remaining hostages home, including Americans.
There was no other way for this war to end than with a hostage deal. And I'm deeply satisfied this day has finally come, for the sake of the people of Israel and the families waiting in agony.
The president says the brokered talks with Middle East leaders also included working together with the incoming Trump administration, acting as one voice for the U.S. President-elect Trump, in a social media post, took credit for reaching the deal. The deal kicks in on Sunday. This is ABC News.
Your news.